Roger Stone joins us now, a controversial confidant and tactician of Donald Trump and the campaign. So, Roger Stone, would you have ever expected a warm embrace in Washington, D.C., as you're going to get today?
Well, it's very exciting. You know, this will be my fifth inauguration, but I have never experienced, you know, kind of the intensity and the excitement of this one. It's really, it's historic. It's epic. It's really incredible. Or as Trump would say, it's huge.
It's going to be beautiful, he would say. Are dirty tricks part of the reason why this is happening today?
I mean, the dirty tricks that Hillary Clinton tried to perpetrate on Trump, yeah, I do think they backfired. But fortunately, the voters saw through all of that.
And the tone of the campaign, do you take any responsibility for that?
I mean, this was a very hard-fought, perhaps most vicious presidential campaign on both sides. I mean, Hillary Clinton referred to me and my friends as deplorable. There's some elitism for you. No, we're American citizens just like you. Our votes count as much as yours do. The votes of poor people and working-class people, they count as much as the votes of rich people. That's our system. So this is not beanbag American politics. This was a slugfest for the presidency of the United States, and I think both sides gave as good as they got. This is an American tradition. Let's remember, they accused Abraham Lincoln of fathering illegitimate African-American children out of wedlock. So was this really our toughest campaign? Perhaps not.
Although there is a sense that, you know, the campaign has created a kind of tension between blacks and whites, and that's not something you've necessarily diminished by calling Roland Martin a dumb Negro on CNN.
Well, I regret the second part of that. You're right. I should have just said that he's dumb. But, you know, I don't think anybody takes what I say to be the official communications of the Trump campaign. In fact, I don't think Donald Trump was running for president at the time that
right.
I said that. I'm responsible for my own views. You know, we have a First Amendment in this country that allows you to, you know, to express them.
Well, and Twitter and the First Amendment are kind of, you know, gasoline and matches here as far as you're concerned. Wayne Barrett, the investigative reporter, died. You called him today a piece of human excrement posing as a human being. The slugfest
yes,
is over.
If I may, he wrote four investigative stories on me. I took them to the American Association of Journalism. We found 42 individual violations of their rules and 19 absolute falsehoods. Try to destroy me. This is karma. This is how it works. When you try to hurt people like that, it comes back around.
What's the story with the Russian business? I mean, you've had contacts with Russia. You certainly predicted what was going to come out of Julian Assange's WikiLeaks treasure trove. And, you know, there's some honest suspicion that you had a hand in some of this.
First of all, I had no contacts with Russia. I'd never been to Russia. I never spoke to any Russians within this election cycle or any election cycle. I don't know any Russians. I was never in contact with them. I've never raised money from them. I've never gotten money from them. I was not a conduit between the Trump campaign and any Russian influence.
Is that what you told law enforcement who deposed you?
No, they have never deposed me. I've never been questioned by anybody. I would welcome that, though. And frankly, I hope the Senate Intelligence Committee calls me to testify in public. I would look forward to that. So we can clear the air about this nonsense once and for all. As far as Assange is concerned, no, I actually didn't predict what was in his treasure trove. Here's what I said, to be exact. He's got the goods on Hillary Clinton, and he's going to disclose them. He did, and he did. I never said anything beyond that. I never talked about the substance of what Assange had because I didn't know. I merely knew that he had unspecified political dynamite that would roil her campaign. He did. And it did.
What are you most looking forward to personally over the next 4 years? You're going to have some opportunities to have a pretty high profile, I would suspect, assuming you don't say things like you said to Roland Martin.
Well, I don't intend to take any government position, if that's what you mean, nor do I intend to become a heavy-duty lobbyist or anything like that. I have a new book out. It's my fifth book. I'm hopeful that it, too, will be a New York Times bestseller, like my first book was. But my book on this election and making the president 2016 will be out on January 31st. So my role for the next 4 years, gadfly.
Gadfly to Trump? Sure. Gadfly to Trump?
Gadfly to the entire system. I want Trump to follow through on his platform, and I don't want the establishment types to dissuade him from that course. So gadfly to the system.
So gadfly, maybe you'll be the first one to talk about how much money Donald Trump owes to the Chinese government.
I don't know that he owes any money to the Chinese government. I would be unfamiliar with that, as you stated.
Well, the Deutsche Bank, there's, you know.
He's a businessman, but if he owes money to the Chinese government, I am unaware of that.
Well, why do you think Donald Trump is an important president for America right now? What does he bring to the table?
We need fundamental reform. The last 30 years of the Bushes and the Clintons and the Bushes and the Obamas have brought us endless war, erosion of our civil liberties, massive debt and spending and borrowing, trade deals that have sucked the jobs out of the country, an immigration system that has rendered our streets and communities unsafe, a foreign policy that is incoherent, can't really seem to decide which side we're on, but extremely expensive. We had to go borrow the $1 billion to drop bombs on Libya. So I'm hoping that he can take us in a different direction than the neocons who have run the country into the ground.
You know, one of the missions that we have here in public radio is to extend and to embrace a greater audience than ever before. Do you think we could get you to be a contributor to public radio?
Sure, I'd be delighted. You know, look, I am. I will talk to anybody anywhere about what I think. That's what's great about our American political system.
Finally, I'm told that you have on your back a tattoo of Richard Nixon. Is that true?
That is true. It's about the size of a pineapple, right between my shoulder blades.
And you're a single guy, right? You're a single guy, right?
No, I'm actually married with grandchildren,
children.
But my tattoo of Nixon is not an ideological, even a political statement. What it is a reminder in life when things don't go your way, when you get knocked down, when you're defeated, when you're beaten, when it's something you really want and you fall short, you have an obligation to get up off the mat and keep fighting. That's the lesson of Nixon. It's personal. It's not political.
But your grandchildren must look at your back and go, who the hell is that, Grandpa?
No, they say, wow, that's really cool, Grandpa.
All right. Roger Stone, where are you going to be sitting today?
I'm up front somewhere. I'm just sitting going through this now, looking at the map. But I'm just honored to be there at all. And we're obviously crossing our fingers against the rain.
Roger Stone, longtime political advisor and friend of Donald Trump, author of the book The Making of the President 2016, How Donald Trump Orchestrated a Revolution, out at the end of the month. Roger, thanks so much. We'll talk to you again, I hope.
Great. Many thanks.